Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to Trolled, the podcast that takes your online Twitter experience of being trolled and turns it into something positive, exciting, enhancing, empowering, and ultimately moving, but hopefully funny. My guest today is the brilliant David Lionel Badil, a man of many talents. David, the point of this podcast is called Trolled, and it's really about Twitter and social media and just how we deal with it. And so first question to you is, well, you got me on Twitter in 2009. How did you get on Twitter?
Was it 2009?
Well, we were doing The Infidel. I was in your film, The Infidel.
Yeah.
And I remember being on set, and you and Omid and David Schneider said to me, you've got to get on this thing. Tweet about The Infidel. And I was like, well, I can't even send an email. And you literally signed me up onto Twitter.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry. It was India Knight, the journalist, lovely woman, who got me on. And it's interesting, I think, because in 2009, she said to me, you've got to do this thing. It's marvellous. It's like a cocktail party, she said. Not something I really knew about except in Ronnie and Corbett, you know, in two Ronnie sketches. Like, I don't think I've ever been to a cocktail party except ones I've seen them doing, like with jokes about Hendon. So she said it's like a cocktail party. It's all your loveliest friends, all the people you like to talk to, you know, they're all there. It's like that. Which it was for about 3 minutes.
I thought it was a bit longer.
Well, maybe longer than that, but not for about a month. It was lovely, and it did seem to be, oh, there's all these nice people on it, and they're all talking nicely, and they're all bigging each other up, and it's a very positive space. And then, of course, it changed.
So
I'd like to, if you were to ask me, when did you notice it changing, I wouldn't be able to tell you.
I used to follow you, and I remember it being full of all the witty, funny people, of which you were one of yourself, and you could get all this lovely, witty, funny banter. You'd be watching television with David Badil or India Knight, and we'd all be tweeting each other. It was like a funny village.
Mm.
And there were a lot of female voices on as well, I remember. And everybody was saying, wow, this is the new empowerment of you and Stephen Fry having an open conversation. Mm. Those were the good days, weren't they?
Well, I don't think they're completely over, and I think, you know, neither of us would still be on the platform if it was just completely shit, and perhaps we'll come to the upside of it. I mean, I should say straight away, I am doing a show, and it hasn't stopped me coming on your slightly overlapping podcast. But as you know, I do these one man shows now, and I've done one called Fame Not the Musical, and I did one called My Family Not the Sitcom, and my new one, which I'm work in progressing at the moment, is called Trolls Not the Dolls, and is about specifically my experience battling or engaging with trolls. But also, I kind of think it's also about the way we live now, the way that identity is created now through anger and through outrage and through taking up very, very polarized positions, is sort of infects the whole of society, to the point that, you know, a troll is president of the United States. You know, that's what he is. You know, it's no question that, not just because he uses Twitter like a troll, he is generally a troll. The way he speaks, the positions he takes, it's all the extremeness of it comes from there.
And how would you define a troll?
Well, I would define a troll primarily as in terms of abuse. And I don't mean that necessarily in terms of, like, you know, a specific type of abuse. So it doesn't have to be the sacred cows of abuse. It doesn't have to be racist abuse or misogynistic abuse. Basically, it's just someone who either unprovoked, which is probably the classical troll, or in a very extreme, aggressive response to something that you have said on social media decides to slag you off in a sort of disproportionate and extreme way. So actually in my show, I break them down into a number of different types. And the classical type are what I call the one word trolls. So I'll give you a quick example. I don't want to do too much material from that show, but they often involve the destruction of niceness. I mean, it's more complicated when it's you've done a joke and it's a heckler, and there's definitely a relationship between a troll and a heckler, and that is partly why I spend a lot of time putting them down, and we'll come to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But as an example of niceness being destroyed, I write children's books. Mm-hmm. And I get quite a lot of parents coming up to me or sending me pictures, but in this case coming up to me in the street and saying, oh, my children read your books, can we have a selfie with them? So I was in Cornwall, like to increase the niceness. I was on holiday in a lovely village in Cornwall. My wife is from Cornwall. It was a nice day, and this woman came up to me with her two children who are like 9 and 11 girls, said, can they have a picture with you? I said, yes, of course. Then she tweeted the picture, said, here's the picture of you. They were huge fans of your books. And I retweeted it and said, it's an absolute pleasure, despite the, you know, whatever. And I actually said, because it wasn't a nice day. I've got that wrong. See, this is my truth thing. I have to get it absolutely right. It was a slightly grey day. So that was the only. So I said, it's an absolute pleasure to have the photo taken, despite the English summer sky, blah, blah, blah. And someone underneath that wrote, nonce. And that's funny. It's definitely funny. There's no doubt it's funny. And quite often trolls are funny. Yeah. All right? But what I think about that is, I don't think that he was trying to be funny. I think that what he is, normally a he, not always, but 70%, I'd say, it's a he, is... He was called Mourinho Inn, at Mourinho Inn.
Oh, he's done me loads of times.
Oh, has he?
I'm a nonce too.
Right. Oh, you're a nonce too. Well, all right. So maybe that's one of his catchphrases. But at Mourinho Inn, he hasn't got a lot of time for niceness in his life. He wants it out of his life as quickly as possible. So one word will do, you know, and then he'll just like, that's it, nonce, right? And I get quite a lot of those. I've noticed moron, slag, you know, whatever it might be, you know, bore, you know, this sort of thing like, we don't have time to like really deal with the fact that we hate you.
Zio.
Well, I don't get that as often, and we'll come to that.
Shill, Tory,
racist Tory, hashtag racist Tory. Yeah. I get that quite a lot. Centrist, definitely. Jew, I get quite a lot. Yes. I still get Jew quite a lot from all sides. I mean,
it's really old school, that, isn't it?
It is old school. Well, the other day, I got someone saying, what was it? I put up, again, it's kind of interesting when there's children involved, because I think it draws your eye and your ear, if you like, to the extremity of it. But I put up a photo of me and my son. We'd gone to see the kid who would be king.
Yeah.
And Ezra, my son, who's 14, is now the same height as me and very cool and very funny. Ezra is like very funny. I mean, Ezra trolls me all the time. In fact, he actually trolled me the other day. I mean, he trolls me in real life in the sense that everything I do, he slags off. I mean, literally everything. The other day, he said to me, Dad, what does it feel like to know that you'll probably be dead before Brexit is sorted out? Like, over breakfast, I had to think about that. You know, he's not wrong, but also it's a point about how old I am that he's trying to make. And he did troll me the other day because I sometimes use Instagram, which I don't know how much
you
know about.
I didn't see you as an Insta person.
Well, I'm not really, but I got sort of convinced to put something on it the other day. And I've got like 6,000 followers on Instagram, so it's a bit pathetic.
Yeah.
And it's not for me, really.
It's for models.
It's for models who are doing the Fire Festival.
Exactly what I was going to say. It's the £250,000 for picture. No,
clearly, it's not for me, but I somehow or other have an Instagram account. one of the things I do on my Instagram account is I don't bother to put as good jokes because it's not really a comedy space. No. I've noticed you can't really
there's no nuances.
Well, and also it's just not physically set up as well. Like one of the great things about Twitter is caption jokes. Like you can put a picture on Twitter and a caption, and it reads brilliantly. It draws the eye straight away to the gag, and I've used that a lot, and I think that's a really good thing. Mm-hmm. On Instagram, the picture's too big and the writing's too small, so I put shit jokes on there.
And a lot of them don't read.
They don't read. They just look at the picture, right? So I'd never have put this on Twitter. I just thought, I'll put it on Instagram because it's not very funny. So when we were in Cornwall recently, I took a picture of a beaten up old boat that I saw on a beach, and I said, and on Instagram I said, bit disappointed with my new super yacht. Again, I mean, it's Ivor Badil level, I'll be honest with you. Sorry, Ivor.
Ivor is his brother.
And Ezra Ezra, underneath it, Ezra at Ezra BB, went, ha, 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 great one, Dad. That's straightforward trolling, isn't it? That's straightforward trolling from Ezra. So anyway, to come back to the Jew thing, I was at the Kiddie Would Be King, which is Joe Cornish's new movie, and I went with Ezra, and there were pictures in the papers of me and Ezra, Ezra looking unbelievably cool in a tracksuit and handsome and all that shit, and me looking grey and fat and smiling too much and whatever. And I said on Twitter, again, actually not a great joke, but just sort of slightly sweet thing, I think, I said, me and Ezra at the Kiddie Would Be King, one of us is looking really cool, if only I could work out which one. And someone just wrote underneath it, it's not you, Jew. I thought, it's sort of extraordinary, isn't it? It's sort of amazing. So obviously, I retweeted that, you see. I retweeted that. And I can't remember what I said in response, but I, you know, made a joke about it, which is, again, we need to come to, which is my way of dealing with it, which... Let's come to it.
I've got a couple of questions. Right, okay. First of all, do you remember the first time you got trolled and for why?
No, I can't remember.
When did the... All right.
I can't remember. The first time I... realised that Twitter was an unstable space. I was on This Week, that programme with Andrew Neil, and I said something disparaging, I can't remember what it was, I think, about Diane Abbott, who'd had a go at me. All while I've been on that programme, had been really quite aggressive to me.
With her? You'd been on with her?
Yeah, it was before she was back in the Shadow Cabinet. Yes. She was just on This Week. And she'd had a go at me, slightly unprovoked, about this... little stupid film I'd done for them. You know, when you're on that show, it's something that you do, slightly embarrassing little films. And I know it can't, this was ages ago, and I can't even remember what I said about it, but I said something slightly disparaging about her. And it led to suddenly, and I'd never really noticed it before, loads and loads of people having a go at me. And now I know how that works. Mm. But at the time, it was quite shocking. I thought, where are all these people coming from? When's it going to stop? Blah, blah, blah. And that was probably the first time I thought, oh, I see. You have to be a bit careful what you say on here.
So that's interesting, because a lot of the people that are coming on the programme have taken a strong political view on something. You know, Graham Linehan's coming on. Or
That'll be interesting.
They're really interesting, you know, with the transgender stuff. I stuck my head above the parapet mainly because of you, because you have been very inspiring and brave.
Thank you.
Often it's agenda-driven, or because you stuck your head up to talk about politics, but this sounded like it was often I look at them and they're attacking you just for you.
Well, yeah, that's definitely the case. I mean, it's in my show that I do about trolls that I'm developing, one of the things I think about quite a lot is... because, like, the family show would seem to be unbelievably relatable for people. Yeah. A lot of people would come up to me afterwards and say, oh, I've got similar family, blah, blah, blah. But actually, this show isn't the same insofar as it's trying to talk about something that I think is important and that I think is affecting the world. But actually, you kind of have to be pretty visible to get the level of trolling that I get.
Tell me about the level of trolling you get. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you have to have a lot of followers, and you have to some extent, have people have an idea that they think they know who you are already. The people who don't like you, that's part of what they do, is like, you know, they will slag you off on the basis that they think you are this, that, or the other, and that will be, to some extent, the prerogative of someone who is already well known, because Erica Jong said, the more famous you are, the more people will get you wrong.
Right.
And so one of the things you're constantly having to deal with, and you are as well on social media, is people who assume they know what you think and will attack you on the basis that they've assumed that. I mean, I get that a lot with Israel.
Well, I was going to say, ours is slightly different, because I was absolutely fine as ex-EastEnders and sort of like benign actor, just having a nice time on Twitter with my whatever number of followers. It was when I started to speak out on anti-Semitism on the left and things I found abhorrent, the tropes, and that's when the hate started.
Yes.
But did you, because I noticed, as a man I know who has very strong views on Israel and who in no way could be called a Zionist, the level, when you started to speak out about anti-Semitism, which is separate to anti-Zionism, what made you do it?
Well, what made me do it initially was probably nothing to do with the left. I mean, I had been writing, I mean, it's a weird thing in a way because it feels like it's parallel, but it probably isn't quite. I wrote a piece in 2011 for the Daily Telegraph. I was on Twitter by then, but it wasn't such a big deal. called, it was about how anti-Semitism entered the zeitgeist, and it was about a sort of new fashionability of anti-Semitism. And it was around about the time Galliano had said that anti-Semitic thing, and then there was a couple of other things knocking about at the same time. That famous people had said, Charlie Sheen had said something anti-Semitic and blah, blah, blah. And I wrote this piece, and to some extent it was about how that the thing that I've banged on a lot since, which is that the weird specific racism offered to Jews, as it were, creates a sort of fashionability to anti-Semitism in an era of identity politics, because if you define yourself against the man, against the forces that you see as elite and in control, because Jews are the only race who get a specific double-edged racism whereby they are both high and low status, so we are both vermin and in control of the world, and no other race has that. That means you can get people, and he was doing it, Galliano, he was saying, you know, you Jews are this, that and the other, you're in control, blah, 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 underneath the video. I pointed out, underneath the video of him saying that, there's someone saying, oh, the problem with the Jews is you're not allowed to say anything about them, but one day we will rise up against them, and no other race will get that. You won't see that said about black people or about brown people or whatever. Only that thing of like, so my point was, this creates a particular opportunity, bad opportunity, toxic opportunity for politics of oppression, of rebellion, to see the Jews as the enemy. But I think initially it was a melange of old-style right-wing neo-Nazi people and conspiracy theorists and whatever, who I noticed coming at me for being Jewish. And it was kind of shocking and awful, but expected, I suppose. Once, if you expect that those people are going to come out the woodwork, then you expect them.
So when you write David Baddiel Jew as your Twitter handle, did you know that by putting the word Jew under your picture that that would incite some level of reaction?
I didn't know it, but it didn't surprise me when it did. And, you know, occasionally I do get people, racists, sort of saying, you know, oh, why have you said that? And, you know, there's a Jeremy Corbyn supporter in my show who says, is that all you are? No other achievements in your life, she says, Angela, you know. And then she says something like, no other achievements in your life. Oh, well, I've seen you perform, brackets, woeful, right? Yeah, just stick with Jew, right? She says, I know, it's fantastic, right? It's fantastic, but it is funny, primarily. I just think it's funny. I've always thought the word is funny. It's a funny word. It's a funny thing to call yourself. One of the things my son does when he's trolling me is he calls me Jew all the time. But also, it's defiant. It's saying,
I reclaim the word for
myself. And I'm not going to be ashamed of it. And the fact that there is this weird thing that Jew seems to be an insult as opposed to Jewish person, and you'll find that Gentiles who are trying to be nice will say Jewish, but won't say Jew. I always think, no, say Jew, you know, because otherwise what you're doing is sort of admitting that the word is complex and difficult, and in a way that's what you have to face, you know.
And it's only three letters. So
it's only three letters, so it doesn't take very long. So anyway, I noticed all that, and then when Corbyn got the leadership and when I noticed that there was this extra thing going on, and that I started to talk more specifically about it in the Labour Party. But I would say that when I tend to talk about it, I talk about the left rather than the Labour Party, because there's loads and loads and loads of this going on, nothing to do with the British Labour Party. It's a global phenomenon, and it infects that part of it, that sort of confusion between anti-Semitism and what they see as, you know, what people call the socialism of fools, which is a sort of fighting the man, fighting banking, fighting global power. That's the left. That isn't just the British Labour Party at all. You know, that mural. I mean, I wrote a piece in the Sunday Times about this. Well, the key thing with that mural, the key element of that mural, is Mir One, the artist, when he had to take it down, and when he was supported by Jeremy Corbyn, who said, I don't see why you have to do this, the key thing he said was some old white Jewish folk got upset by it. And the key word in that is white, right? Because what he's doing by deliberately saying white is he's positioning Jews as on top of the privileged tree.
Absolutely.
If he'd left out the word white, it suddenly isn't as privileged. And it's a deliberate way of saying that Jews operate from a position of privilege. And here's the key thing about that. Jews are not white.
Yeah.
Jews, no Jew feels white. Not a single Jew. You know, and white means a specific thing. It doesn't mean colour. It means safety. It means safety and security, and it means that the mainstream culture is never going to turn on you. And obviously that is not true of Jews.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You're brilliant because you don't get emotional and you engage, but you do it in a very funny way. Was that a conscious decision that you would deal with your trolls with humour?
Yeah, I mean, that's the key thing for me. I mean, not that I've always managed to do it, and sometimes I have slightly lost control emotionally with some of the staff, and sometimes I've not been funny enough. But my basic position from the word go, and beyond the racist stuff, just people slagging me off, is these are hecklers, essentially. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm a comedian. Yeah. These are hecklers. I've made a joke. They're telling me it's a shit joke. If I was in a club, I would think of something funny to say, and I would repeat what they've said and then take the piss. And I talk about this in the show as well. Heckle put-downs are like improvisation. And as you all know, as a very great actress, that improvisation is about yes and, mm-hmm. right? Or yes but, actually, in terms of a heckle put-down. And so what you do with a heckle put-down is you don't tend to say, oh, I'm so angry with you and how dare you say that, whatever. You say, yeah, that's interesting, and then you disarm them and you fuck them up, yeah? And I can remember that happening in a club the first time I ever did that. I can remember that. I was comparing the Comedy Store in about 1989. I did some joke about sex because my set was almost entirely about sex, and some drunk bloke shouted out, "It's better from behind," and I said, "Yes, a bit like your face," right? Which is not a brilliant heckle put down, but it's, you know, it's not bad.
Yeah.
But most importantly, it's yes, but. It's not saying, oh, how, you know, don't fuck up my joke, whatever. Yeah. It's saying, oh, yeah, I accept what you say, and now I've made you look stupid on the top of it. And that's what I do with trolls.
And does that work on Twitter?
Almost totally works. We'll deal with this. Let me just park a thought there, which is recently people have been telling me I'm not allowed to quote tweet to people or subtweet to people. That's how it works for me, is that I have to quote what they've said, mm-hmm. and then over the top of it, I will say something that takes the piss out of them. And it does work because that response, you know, I mean, I got something the other day. I mean, they're not even that clever sometimes. Sometimes they are literally just sort of responses. So someone was telling me the other day when I got into some recent spat with the left. This was the Winston Churchill spat I was in recently.
Oh, yes.
Someone said you might want to look at the British entry of Jews to Palestine, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, you might want to fuck off. Right? and that got loads and loads and loads of likes and retweets. And straightforwardly, that means it's worked as a heckle put down. People aren't liking it and retweeting it for any other reason than it's made them laugh.
Yes.
So that is why I do it. And I would be honest with you that I think a difference between, not that you're not funny, but a difference between you and Rachel and a couple of other people who have started to speak out brilliantly.
And Eddie, Marzan.
Yeah, about anti-Semitism is that I totally prefer, for me, it's partly because I am a comedian, keeping it funny if I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to leave it to you and other people to be more straightforwardly I'm not having this.
You really inspired me to be on Twitter because I could see how much abuse and trolling you were getting, and it was like Teflon. Mm. You just batted it away. Does it impact in any way on your life?
Well, I don't refer to it one more time, but I'm going to have to. I mean, all this is in my show, and one of the things that I thought it was important to do in my show was to say, at what point does this become not good for your mental health? Because I'm a strong person, and I have had many years doing stand-up comedy. And one thing stand-up comedy will do for you is thicken your skin, because it just means that you have to deal with some people in every audience, even when you're quite, you know, doing Wembley Arena and they've all come to see you or whatever it might be. There'll always be someone who you think, oh, they're not enjoying it. And then occasionally there'll be people who really obviously aren't enjoying it and they're telling you your shit, and you have to deal with that. And in any normal circumstance, that can be incredibly debilitating. You know, people aren't used to doing their job and someone just telling them their shit. But somehow as a comedian, you do have to get used to that. And that's psychologically very toughening. So I think when it started to happen, this is definitely the case. Or if I'm in a big spat, which I seem to get into quite a lot, and there's people being really horrible, the basic psychological mechanism is a moment of hurt, a moment of, oh, that's horrible, and then how can I turn it into material? And the how can I turn it into material is unbelievably healing. Because within seconds, I don't care about the hurt. In fact, I'm quite pleased. If I can think of something funny, I think, brilliant. That's absolutely, I'm not thinking about my ego or my pride or whatever anymore. I'm just thinking, I can't wait to get this out. But I then sometimes think about what's the psychic cost of doing that at a high level, which I sometimes do, where it's sometimes like 10 or 11 in a row or whatever. And I use this particular one to which I didn't have a funny response. Or I did a semi-serious response to this, which was someone just writing, every time I see at Badil. It's always very interesting that they've put at Badil.
Because to I never. Sure,
well, but I never look for my name on Twitter, and I would never go looking for my name like some people do. You know, whatever. If some people want to slag me off without me knowing, that is totally fine as far as I'm concerned. But if someone puts at Badil, they want me to know. So this guy put, he's called at Lou Bakerd. He said, if I say at Badil, I think two things. One, he's a shit comedian. Two, he's a shit human being. And I retweeted that, and I put a serious response to it, which is, I said, I showed this to Morwenna and said that he'd said I was a shit comedian and a shit human being. She said, why? And then I put, Morwenna doesn't really get Twitter. And I thought that was important for me because I wanted to sort of say, for someone who's not on this site and who's an incredibly lovely person, you'll know my wife is like the nicest, most empathetic person in the world. I wanted to drop of normality in all this stuff. Like, she would just think, like, why on earth would someone write that to somebody who they don't know and who is not in any way, you know, doing bad things to them? It's so weird that you might. And I wanted to say, actually, it's not normal. It's not normal. You can get lulled into a thing as someone who spends a lot of time batting it off into thinking, oh, this is normal. All these people saying these horrible things about me. It's not normal, and you need to count the psychic cost.
Everything that I've noticed I've been accused of and smeared with is often a complete projection of who that person is who's tweeting that to me and their politics. Do you, another quick jump, do you end up having a relationship with certain trolls? Have you ended up sort of forming, and there's a couple that I tweet regularly, but who have become almost like, you know, those paparazzi that hang outside your house and you end up inviting in for a cup of coffee?
Yes and no. I mean, I certainly recognise certain ones coming back at me, although I also tend to mute them after. My basic rule of thumb is I'll put them down once, then I'll mute them. Partly because I don't want them coming back with their stupid bollocks. The rules are, as far as I'm concerned, and this is the same with hecklers.
Yeah.
If a heckler is put down and you get a big laugh off the heckler, if they keep going, then eventually you call security and get them removed, because the rules are, I've won. You fucking shut up now. Yeah. And but on Twitter, yes, they keep going, and I tend to mute them.
Do you block
in that
or
case?
Mute?
Mute mainly because, as we know, they get hard on from being blocked.
Yes.
And I don't want them to get the blocked hard on. Really, I don't want the screenshot of them to their stupid mates. You know, of like, oh, Badil's blocked me because whatever. But occasionally, I get into conversations because I think I'm just interested in what happens here. So I don't want to give away everything after my show, but there was a very funny thing that happened. So this is a right-wing thing. So let's not forget.
Let's not forget.
Let's really not forget with all our stuff about the left. It's all over the right as well, yes. like horribleness yes. and whatever. And so this was not...
It's just I don't particularly care about the right. It's the left that is my home party.
Of course. No, of course. And we both get, and you get probably more, people saying, oh, why aren't you saying this about the Conservatives? Yeah. And your point correctly is, I expect them to be horrible. Mm. But
yes, you're completely but right.
I will react... Because I think of myself as no wing, by the way.
Yes.
I mean, I've voted Labour all my life, but I really think of myself as no wing now. I don't think of myself as left wing, right wing. I try and think about each individual social issue originally as I can, mm-hmm. without imposing I'm left wing, so yeah. I think about it like this. So if I say something and some right wing people start having a go at me, then, you know, yeah, I will deal them as them trolls in the same way. So I did this joke about... Chris Williamson, is that his name?
Yes.
Not Chris Williamson. No, he's the Labour guy. Gavin Williamson.
Oh, Gavin Williamson.
I did this joke about him when he got Defence Secretary. I just a picture of him, I said, and the Tories seem to have an endless supply of men now who, if push came to shove, could play minor royal in the Crown, right? And Nick Timothy, who used to be Theresa May's aide, she was her main aide in the last election, retweeted that and did something very deliberate. He said he went to a comprehensive and then Bradford University or Scarborough University, something like that. I know it's less funny, but it's true. And I thought, I wasn't saying anything about his background, was I?
No.
Matt Smith is in the Crown, yeah. and is working class, so that's irrelevant. But what you're doing, because he's got loads of followers in that silo, is you're whipping up your followers to believe that I must be saying something sneering and liberal and elitist about Gavin Williamson, because that confirms the prejudices of your tribe, and it's important to you to keep that going. And yes, immediately, I get all these right-wing people in the modern right-wing way saying... accusing me of snobbery and elitism and sort of liberal patronising, blah blah blah.
So and ironic, well, that comes from the right.
Yeah, well, it's incredible. But loads and loads of this, and then one bloke. And this is to answer your question about a relationship, saying because it'd all been about me being sneering, this sort of sneering thing. Said I saw you sneering once to my friend on a TV show. He wasn't even a celeb or anything, and I said who. And it was interesting because the last thing he was expecting clearly was a normal question. So it's like a little bit goes by and he went, my friend Howard, right? And I said, yeah, what was the show? Right? And he went, oh, I have to remember. Right? So then he goes away for 20 minutes, comes back with Jamie Theakston's The Priory. Right? And I said, and what happened? Right? Because I can't remember it at all. And then eventually, after like 2 hours, I imagine him searching through old VHSs, he says, I've had a look and actually I think I was a bit oversensitive about what you said to my friend. And I put the whole thing on Twitter as it's like a slightly overclimactic but rather beautiful, anticlimactic but rather beautiful one act play.
Beautiful.
Right? Because it was, but I thought like that thing of actually engaging. Yeah. And one thing I think, which I don't know how much you think this is happening, and I don't know either, but I feel it is how much of these people are basically Putin control bots. And by bots, I don't really mean the algorithmic things whereby just anything to do with Brexit is retweeted by a machine. I mean, the other type of bots,
definitely.
People paid in troll farms in St. Petersburg to look like they live in Lincoln and say all this stuff.
Yeah.
Because they completely definitely exist, and I've had engagements with them where I think, well, clearly you are not who you say you are. And there's a really weird thing going on. I mean, a fascinating thing going on, creepy though it is, whereby in the list of things that Putin wants to use to destabilize the West is anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
That's in there. It's like, okay, well, that works quite well because it makes people think there is an elite controlling them. I want them to think that because that inspires discontent and Brexit and all the rest of it. And it's a kind of almost brilliantly clever, like, Nazi philosophy idea.
But then I equally get the Russian troll farm, you know, people back, sort of also inflaming the kind of, like, I support the Jew, you know, like, with their one follower. They'll say something equally inflammatory about the Corbyn things.
Right.
They just want to say, yeah,
just want to create discontent.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, someone said to me the other day, David Patriarchos.
No.
Have you not spoken to him?
No, who he?
Oh, you don't know him? I'm surprised.
David Patriarchos?
Yeah, David Patriarchos. He's a writer... Jewish, though he sounds Greek. I think he's Jewish and Greek. In fact, I spoke to him. He was in Athens. He's writing a piece for The Tablet, which is... The only thing I knew about The Tablet is Frank Skinner, who was a Catholic, a devout Catholic. Mm. When I lived with him, he used to get The Tablet.
Oh.
And I think it's the Catholic sort of newsletter.
Squawk box.
No, it's not really the Catholic squawk... Well, probably it is. Although it's very unfair to The Tablet, which I think is a very august journal that investigates things like the Vatican says, and it's a theological journal. But he's writing a piece... I'm going to say for the Jewish tablet, but it can't be. I think it just is the tablet, about anti-Semitism. And he told me this thing, which, again, I didn't really know, but that because he also does a lot of analysis of social media. He said one thing that he tracked was a particular tweeter, a Russian bot, but pretending to be someone else, who tweeted just virulent anti-Semitism, virulent anti-Semitism, virulent anti-Semitism until 2 weeks before the Brexit vote. And then having amassed like 20,000 followers based on anti-Semitism, suddenly went full out vote Brexit. And I thought, that's fascinating, isn't it? That's like the bait is anti-Semitism, and the reward is that political victory.
Yeah, you're right. It's sowing the seeds. I think those of us who have had a voice, I think, do get targeted. Because I remember, I will probably cut this out, but Louise Mensch tweeting me and going, "Okay, you've impacted. Just to let you know." And I thought, "You're paranoid. You're mad."
So what was she saying?
She said, "You've impacted." It was around the time of the Ever spraying the Ever thingy being invited to the Labour Party conference under Momentum, when she spray painted the Warsaw Ghetto Wall, and that really seemed to make an impact, and that was all on news and everything. And she, I remember her tweeting me and saying, you've impacted, or she texted me and said, "You've impacted, the troll farms are now very aware of you, just watch your back, because you're going to end up with a lot of horrible traffic coming your way from the nine-numbered,
I mean, I get loads of them.
I mean, you've had it for a long time.
I get loads of them, and particular subjects will bring them up. I mean, again, often nothing to do with Jews, but I did, like, the most innocuous joke, funny, a caption joke. Nicola Sturgeon, there was a picture of her in front of various sort of rather grim-looking SNP people, but she was right at the front, and they were all looking really grim, and I said, "Breaking Lulu unhappy with backing singers," right?
I mean,
so it got loads and loads of retweets. It's a funny caption gag.
It was a funny caption.
But then it inspired the ire of the Scottish nationalists. And someone did say to me, while all that was going on, "You have to remember that political batshittery on here began with Scottish independence." And I think they might have a point there. But there is another thing there, which is that some of that is definitely Putin. Because if anyone wants the fucking breakup of the Union, it's Putin, because he just wants the breakup of any European-held coalition of nations, because it all just makes it easier for him to invade Ukraine. And it was weird, because I thought, I cannot possibly be inspiring this level of anger from Scottish nationalists because I made a joke essentially about Nicola Sturgeon looking like Lulu, who is an attractive woman.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying anything about Nicola Sturgeon there.
No. She's a very attractive woman.
Yeah.
Do you ever have breaks from Twitter? Do you ever think, "Oh, fuck this, I can't be asked anymore"?
That's a very good question, because I would say the main issue for me on Twitter is not really, "Oh my God, there's so much anti-Semitism," or, "Oh my God, you know, there's so much hate on it," which obviously is important, but it's just, it's too addictive.
Yeah.
You know, it's dangerously addictive. I mean, even with it being horrible. And in a way, when it gets really horrible, you kind of like find yourself more drawn into it, because you, particularly if you think, "Oh no, I can do another joke, or I can fix this in some way, I can fix it with comedy, or I can fix it with argument," or whatever, which you can't a lot of the time. I mean, you know, I get into actual big spats, as you probably know. I've had one with Owen Jones recently, or there'll be other people like that, big sort of people with big followings, Nick Timothy, if it might be on the other side of the fence. And then it's a weird thing where Twitter is not conversation, is it? It's public statement. So you have this weird thing where you're having a conversation, but both of you are aware that, or multi people are aware, that really it's the audience that you're talking to. And that doesn't service proper conversation. It doesn't service the nuances of truth, because everyone's trying to win because they want the audience out there to feel that they've done that. And the thing that happened with Owen recently, which, again, wasn't really to do with race, but has probably an element of it, because we've been talking about Russia, is I said this thing about how I thought it was kind of amazing. There was a news story about some aide of Putin, his wife owns $10 billion pounds or euros worth of property. So I said it's kind of weird that the left still has a residual sympathy with Russia, considering that now it's a kind of out of control capitalist state, which it is. It's a totally out of control capital. It's what happens when capitalism completely goes mental. And Owen Jones started saying, "I'm on the left and I'm not pro Russia. I've written loads of articles attacking Putin." So I then made the mistake of saying, instead of just saying, "Well, I should just have said some members of the left," I said, "Well, you know, there's Galloway, there's Corbyn, there's Seamus Mill," and he focused on Corbyn and started saying, I suppose you know that Jeremy Corbyn went on a sort of Chechnya, anti-Putin Chechnya march, blah, blah, blah. So of course I don't know. I hardly leave the house, right? And blah, blah, blah. But then it led to, what it led to was loads of his people all wanting to say, you were owned, Badil, just admit it, right? 1-0 owned, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, no, I think what this is a debate about how much the left still has sympathy with Russia, which obviously there is no answer definite to that. Some would say that some of them do and others don't. Whatever. It's a nuanced debate, isn't it? How much do the left still have sympathy with the present Russian state?
Yeah.
But they couldn't have that. No. It was like you have to eat shit, admit you've been owed, admit defeat. And truth does not lie in that idea. And
it's like with Venezuela as well, isn't it? And Maduro, they just can't have the debate either.
Yeah.
What's the worst smear that you've ever read about yourself to try and silence you on Twitter?
Well, the best one I do to wear this in my show, my absolute fave, although it does have truth, but I know what it stemmed from, is I do kick up the odd hornet's nest on Twitter, and sometimes it's the left, sometimes it's the right, sometimes it's just a weird one. And the weird one I kicked up, and I actually have been thinking about doing this for a while because it happens periodically, are the Madeleine McCann trolls. Every so often, and you know, we should talk about this, I think, because this is about Twitter. If you want to see humanity at its absolute worst, worse than anything we've talked about so far,
I totally agree.
Click on the words Madeleine McCann when it's trending on Twitter, which it does periodically. So anything that happens with like more money given to the search for her, or they're just restarting the search, or recently when that footballer tragically went missing, her name was trending because people were saying, oh, they've called off the search for that footballer. But Madeleine McCann, they keep going for her because it's all a conspiracy and because they're middle class or blah, blah, blah. So it's extraordinary. Yeah. If you click on the words Madeleine McCann on Twitter when they trend, and I would say they trend every couple of months, you won't find one, I would say, that is sympathetic to a couple of parents who lost their child in the most horrific way possible. You won't find one thing, right? So anyway, I said this on Twitter, and the Madeleine McCann trolls mobilised against me and started saying, I was saying that for all sorts of reasons, like tried to sell tickets for my show, and blah, blah, blah. And then one of them started to say, dig up some dirt about me. It's quite hard to dig up dirt about me because I am incredibly open about all the stuff I've ever done. So I talk about being obsessed with pornography, or I talk about, you know, just everything that's ever happened in my life, including all the bad stuff. I talk about depression. I talk about my dad having dementia. You know, nothing negative in my life is not food for me to talk about in comedy. So it's quite hard. So one person said something like, oh, he used to be in a double act, but now his mate is a DJ on Absolute Radio, right? Which Frank does a show on Absolute Radio. And I think that was meant to be whatever. It was wrong because this person said Absolute 80s. Frank has a show on Absolute. But then the next person replying to that said of me, he has always struggled with his sexuality and effectively caused the suicide of Dale Winton, who loved him but couldn't convince him to leave his wife. And I say in my show, how did I miss that? How did I miss Dale coming round to my house and saying, Morwenna, let him go. Just let him go. He clearly wants to be with me.
So, David, you're always busy and you always are doing a million things. You're a true Renaissance man. Tell us when the show, your show, Charles.
Well, at the moment, I'll be doing some more work in progress gigs for it, probably in March and April in London. And there is talk of a tour of it early next year. So the tickets will go on sale quite soon.
If it's anything like My Family, Not the Sitcom, I am so excited to see it.
It is a bit like it, except more about this and less about my family.
You're a very great human being.
Thank you so much, so are you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.